Blog Talk Radio.
I used to think about immature things. You know, like, do you love me? Do you want me? Are you gonna call me like you said you would? Is this really your real phone number?
Rich Boy Cadillac, throw some D's on it. We are here dealing with some technical difficulties, it looks like. Leo, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, well, I guess it's just on my end then. I'm a little slow, went to public school in the inner city, so don't blame me. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Octagon. I'm your host, Clint Little, along with my main man, Leo Showers. Leo, what's going on, brother?
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Hey, man, it's another hot, and I do mean hot day here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. This show, Inside the Octagon, is brought to you by the Sports Grid Podcast, which you guys can listen to every Thursday evening between 6 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Hey, it's Wednesday, the middle of the week, hump day, and this weekend, Madison Square Garden, the Big Apple, Bellator, makes its debut. It invades New York. What do you think about Bellator making its debut in New York? And this car that they put in looks pretty good on paper. Did it live up to the hype?
Man, I never thought I'd see that day where I'd be excited to see a Bellator card. And in New York City, I mean, finally we're getting to see MMA legalized in New York by someone other than the UFC. And they put on a pretty big card. I mean, we're getting to see the return of Wanderlei Silva against Chael Sonnen. What a grudge match that's been in the making for like the last 3, 4, 5 years. You know, we never saw it materialize in the UFC. And now Scott Coker, I mean, he's been the hero of vintage MMA fans for the last few years. He's bringing these fights that we haven't gotten to see in several years. I'm really happy to see these guys go at it in a big stage on pay-per-view.
Nah, definitely. We're checking out Bellator finally making its way. You know, Bellator, even though it is the second leading promotion here in the States, it is certainly proving to be a place where, you know, whether you're a young up-and-comer or a wily veteran who maybe is on, you know, the downside of your career or at least on the wrong end of the career as far as wins and losses, it's a place where you can go revitalize yourself a la Phil Davis. Ryan Bader's making his debut there. So it's a place where other talent outside the UFC is able to go. They don't got to worry about the Reebok deal, so they think of the sponsorships from going from there. The main event, which is really driving it, it's a story 4 years in the making with, I mean, as much controversy behind it as you could almost get in any story. Chael Sonnen, a.k.a. the American Gangster, taking on Wanderlei Silva, a.k.a. the Axe Murderer, one of Pride's most fiercest warriors, taking on a former UFC bad boy, quote-unquote, on the mic. Sonnen, Silva, can it live up to the hype of all this build-up, or are we just going to see two old guys slowly moving around the cage?
Well, there's one criticism I have to make about this card is that you said it yourself. Chael Sonnen is a master promoter, and they just really didn't do that this week, or they haven't so far anyway. Wanderlei Silva, as far as I heard, he didn't even get to New York City until yesterday or today. So, you know, where's the press conference has been? You know, we want to see these guys interact with each other because that's really what this fight is built on, is the massive rivalry that these guys have made with each other. You know, we saw this weird juxtaposition of these two guys at the Ultimate Fighter in Brazil, where they even, you know, they came to blows, but we never saw the actual fight. So why not put these guys in a big press conference and see, you know, what they can do to keep building this fight? As far as the fight itself is concerned, I mean, we haven't seen Wanderlei in 3 or 4 years. He's been suspended for such a long time, you know. For a long time, we probably thought that he might have been retired. His career was over. And, you know, now we get to see him revitalize his career against Chael Sonnen, of all people, in Bellator. We didn't really see much out of Chael Sonnen against Tito Ortiz a few months ago. You know, he kind of looked a little pudgy. He looked out of shape. you know, maybe now with a fuller camp and, you know, motivated against Wanderlei Silva, we'll see a better version of Sonnen. You know, I really expect these guys to kind of bring it, bring all their game to this big stage. And, you know, I expect a pretty decent fight out of these two guys.
And it's interesting that you expect a pretty decent fight out of these two because, in all honesty, I'm not sure what we're going to get between these two. I mean, as you said, Chael Sonnen didn't look that good against Tito Ortiz. Granted, it was at light heavyweight. Where is this one being tested at? Do you, what do we get? Are they fighting
light heavyweight as well? No, this will be at light heavyweight.
Okay, so maybe this time, maybe put the weight on a little bit more accurately so he'll look a little better physically. But these are two guys who are in their 40s. Neither one has been active, really. Sonnen the most active this year, but before that, it's been 2013 since he even stepped his foot in a competitive cage. Early in 2013, August, when he beat Shogun, the last time he won, Silva hasn't even fought since March of 2013. So we're going to see two guys really trying to shake the rust off, especially for Silva. And to be honest, excuse me there, I don't think we're going to see what we could have saw in 2014 when they were originally supposed to fight. But they came up with the USADA testing, Silva hightailed it out the gym, Sonnen popped up for everything this side of the Mississippi. It's unfortunate that it happened, but when Chael Sonnen told the story of Wanderlei Silva and why he ran away from the test, basically it was like, hey, guy comes into the gym, says, I need your piss and your blood, doesn't show you real identification, doesn't say who he is, and obviously the side's not going to tell you they're coming over. So in today's day and age of social media, crazed fans, it is kind of understandable why Silva would be as nervous as he was. He's like, no, dude, I don't know who you are, but, you know, coming from Pride, you never know. Maybe he's taking those Mexican supplements. Is this going to be a stand-up war? Are we going to see Sonnen just basically double-leg Silva to the ground, grind and pound and hold him down? And Silva, he does have a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but we rarely see it. Out of all of his fights, 40-plus career fights, he's only had one submission victory. So it's not like he's a guy who's going to go down there and all of a sudden he's going to turn into Damian Maia on you. I just don't know if this was the right main event. Hype-wise, it's good. And you're right. I'm not sure why we haven't seen more promos, more press conferences for this. I don't know. But hype-wise, it is worthy of the main event. I just don't think Sonnen Silva, we got it 3 years too late, and we are going to see a very bad product, which is we've seen from Bellator in the past. It's really come a lot of criticism.
Back to the original point, is that your biggest asset with Chael Sonnen is his mouth. He can sell you two dogs fighting in the street, and you'll be excited to watch it because he's just that compelling of a guy on a microphone, and we haven't seen that. So, they are putting all their eggs in one basket and expecting a good slugger fight, perhaps. I mean, even against Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen just kind of decided to stand in there against him in the second fight anyway. Why would he do that? I mean, so maybe in this grudge match, it did not work out for him, but the fact is that he tried to stand there against Anderson Silva, one of the best strikers in MMA history. Now, this is a bigger grudge match against Wanderlei Silva. I think he might actually go in there and try to stand and bang with Wanderlei Silva, even though the smarter game plan would be for him to wrestle him and really impose a wrestler and grappling game plan against Wanderlei Silva. I think we're going to see a stand-up war regardless.
You know, and that is interesting because even in the first fight with Silva, I think it was the second round where he came out and stood up in the beginning against Silva, or it might have been the beginning of the third, where he dropped him. Remember, he clipped Silva, and you're right. You want to keep your opponent off balance. You want to keep him guessing on what you're going to do, especially when you are one of the most fierce strikers out there, like Anderson Silva, like Wanderlei Silva at one point in his career was. You're thinking, there's no way this guy's going to stand up with me. Oh, no, there's a right hook that I didn't see coming. So there is a possibility for that. In all honesty, I wonder if how Wanderlei Silva looks physically will determine what Chael Sonnen decides to do. If he looks deflated, in a way, kind of that Vitor Belfort body, you know, that dad bod, which, you know, no, nothing against a dad bod, but as an elite fighter, that's not necessarily the look you're going for. If he's got that, I think Silva might try to stand up with him. Because he might say Silva may not have that speed and that power anymore. Even though the power is the last thing to go. But in Sonnen's mind, he might think, oh, I could probably stand up with him for a little bit at least. He doesn't want to get that clinch game, though. That Muay Thai clinch from Silva with those knees, that's rampage about it. He's still having a headache about that. So I think how Wanderlei Silva looks physically will determine how it turns out. I'm also very curious how Silva's going to look, not just physically, but how's his movement going to be? Are we going to see the explosive Silva where he sits there, waits, and then jumps on you like a shark smelling blood? Or are we going to see a guy who basically resorts to just looking for one haymaker, looking to land it? What Silva do you think we're going to see?
I do expect to see a sort of a tentative Silva. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, this is a guy we haven't seen in the cage in 4 years. There's got to be something to that. I mean, a lot of people talk about ring rust, and I do believe in ring rust. I think that's a very real thing. Your timing goes. He's been mentioning he's been dying to get back in the cage, and this is what he lives for. Okay, but he hasn't done it in so long that something might be different in Silva's game. You know, I mean, maybe he's not that shark that smells blood anymore, and he's going to realize it the hard way. And to your point, I do like Chael Sonnen to keep it at a distance. You know, you don't want to go in there and fight at a short range with Wanderlei Silva because he can knock your head off and with one punch or one knee, regardless of timing or not. So Chael Sonnen, you know, he should keep a fighting distance unless he's going to go in there and grapple with Silva and put him up against the cage. Like I said, I don't expect that. I expect him to, you know, keep Silva at range and try to pick him apart at distance.
Yeah, for Sonnen, I'm thinking what we're going to see is he might come out, throw a couple punches, but honestly, I think he's going to go to what he knows best, especially at his advanced age and lack of the lack of activity over the years. I think he's basically just going to look for when can I get a takedown, when can I get Silva, put him on his back, and try to smash his face or at least pitter-patter him, because we've seen he landed the most strikes in the UFC match against Anderson Silva. Silva looked like he had a pillow fight with his daughter. So, yeah, I think Sonnen is basically just going to look to wrestle him, but I would love it if these two went in there, slugged it out for a little bit, and we just said, you know what, it's a grudge match. Go for hell. Just go for broke, you guys. Let's see what you can do. And best man is last man standing. This is going to be a good matchup right here. Like I said, 3 years too late, but better late than never. Now, Sonnen has said he's here for the quote-unquote gangster weight. Second fight, light heavyweight. He's willing to fight whoever. Last time around, he was willing to step up at heavyweight when a fighter dropped out. We'll get to that matchup in a little bit. Do you think of these two, let's say whoever wins, what do you think is the next possible matchup? Do you do another one, like with maybe Rampage Jackson or one of the older fighters? Or if one of them looks decent enough, do you maybe say, hey, you know what, let's see if we can kind of push them towards that title contention. Maybe not right away, but give them a match that might lead to a title shot. Or are we just saying, you guys are at the point in your career where a title shot is unlikely, but let's just give the fight fans fun fights that they want to see. What do you think Scott Coker does?
Well, when Chael Sonnen was first signed to Bellator, in his press conference, he made it very clear he was here to go on a Legends ass-whipping tour. And he's, after two bookings, you know, he's kept pretty close to that. I mean, he's not going up there against any spring chickens, any guys who are trying to build their names up off of Chael Sonnen. He's going, you know, after the older guys that are, you know, on the tail ends of their careers. And these are fights that are compelling. The fights want to tune in and watch them. So why not keep doing this? Now, a few weeks ago, we were building this Vitor Belfort last fight in the UFC, and we were all dreaming, hey, if he goes to Bellator, there's this Chael Sonnen, there's a Wanderlei Silva, there's all these guys out there in Bellator that if Vitor were to sign with Bellator, there's a lot of dream matchups in there for him. So, yeah, I would expect the winner of this fight to keep this this train going and just kind of go on a Legends ass-whipping tour, as Chael Sonnen would have put it.
Let's say Wanderlei Silva goes in there, he steamrolls Chael Sonnen. Chael would be 0-2 in his comeback to MMA. Is that it for Chael Sonnen? Does he walk away from the sport and say, you know what, maybe I just don't got it anymore? Or is the American Badass still going to be the best fighter on the planet, according to him, and continue to go on from there on, as you put it, and as he said, the legend of that?
I think it would be too early for Chael to retire after only two fights. I mean, if he re-signed with any promotion at all, I think he was looking at it in the long term. And to retire after only two fights, you know, like you said, it's all depending on how he looks. If he goes in there and gets starched, maybe those thoughts might go through his mind. But I think it's a little bit too early. I think he's going to try to cash in as much as he can in the tail end of his career and see if he can, you know, there's probably fights out there that interest him. Like you said, you wanted to step in a very marquee heavyweight fight a few months ago. That didn't happen because it was all last minute. But, like, the interest is there for Chael Sonnen, and people are still going to tune in. People love to see him talk, and people, you know, people are going to tune in to see him fight. So I think we might see Chael Sonnen a few more times before he decides to hang him up for good.
Speaking of the heavyweight fight that Chael Sonnen was going to step in for in the co-main event, we got USA versus Russia. Former UFC, former Strikeforce/Prize. We got Matt Mitrione representing the state. We have, finally, the debut of Fedor, the last effort. Fedor Emelianenko making his Bellator debut. It's been on delay, but maybe hindsight being 2020, that was better. Now that it's in New York, he put him there. The last effort came on Matt Mitrione. How do you see this heavyweight slugfest turning out?
See, this is another misstep of Bellator in promoting this big card. I mean, this is the biggest card. They're putting a lot of marbles in this fight, and they just haven't promoted it. Like, how do you not put The Last Emperor out there for people to see? You know, a lot of people remember this guy as being one of the baddest guys on planet Earth, and we just haven't seen enough interviews, enough press conferences, anything to build up this fight. You know, why not have Fedor just in there in the glorious sweater that he made so famous a few years ago? People just love the legend and the myth of Fedor Emelianenko, and Bellator has kind of dropped the ball and showing us, hey, remember this guy? He's fighting for us now. And like I said, you know, yeah, this fight fell through a few months ago, and now we're getting it. Good for Mitrione. You know, this is a big marquee fight for him. But what's Bellator doing here? I mean, promote the fight a little better.
Now, certainly, you would think that with the free reigns of Bellator not being restricted by a clothing deal like the UFC is with Reebok, it's their first time in New York, it's a pay-per-view. Vanderlei Silva is making his debut for you guys. Fedor is making his debut for you guys. Ryan Bader is making his debut for these guys. Three title fights on the total card. You would think that you had just flooded the market with just non-stop Bellator New York City press conferences, build-ups, countdowns. We haven't gotten that, and it is a shame because Fedor, even though he has looked on the tail end in his career in recent years, he still has that prestige, that aura about him that people remember from Pride. Even in Strikeforce, you know, the knockout of Brett Rogers, the one-punch knockout. Granted, Verdum, Bigfoot Silva, Dan Henderson, those were losses that made him look human. But in a way, you know, he built up so much clout and so much savings with fans, people were willing to overlook it. Oh, well, you know, he got caught in the submission. He didn't take it seriously. Oh, there was a sizing disadvantage. Oh, Henderson just got lucky. He slipped on a banana peel. So there's always excuses made for him. And in his most recent fight last summer, that robbery that Russia gave him over Fabio Molinaro, once again, people were still saying, hey, you know, it is what it is. But Fedor still has a name. I mean, just the name itself, Fedor. See, every great fighter or every great athlete, you could sum up in one name: LeBron, MJ, Mayweather, Conor, Ali,
Ivan Drago.
Drago, yeah. Rocky, right?
Yeah.
So you can always do that, and you can do that with Fedor. I will say this: I am very much looking forward to the presentation of this event because Bellator, that is one thing that they have head and shoulders of the UFC. Their presentation with the stage, big screen, the fireworks, it's a show. And look, this is all entertainment. I know we don't like, the MMA fans don't like the whole WWE aspect of it, but it is entertainment. I am very much looking forward to that. I am curious, though, because Matt Mitrione, he's a tough son of a gun. He's not an easy win for you. And he's very confident that he's going to be able to knock out Fedor. He's got the capability of doing so. Do we see the Last Emperor have another run of being, whoa, the Fedor we remember? Or we just want to see a shadow of himself and Mitrione standing tall once again. Rocky IV, part two, USA.
I think so. I mean, Matt Mitrione is like you said, he's no slouch. He's got power in his hands. And in his last few fights, we've seen Fedor look a little chinny. You know, even back to the Affliction days when he fought Andrei Arlovsky, he was looking really chinny in that fight. And then Andrei Arlovsky decides to go for a crazy flying knee and gets caught in midair. And the myth of Fedor, or not the myth, but the legend of Fedor kept going for a few more years after that. But we have seen Fedor just kind of take a few punches and kind of look dazed. Man, Matt Mitrione, he's been in the game, you know, for a long time, and he's been more active than Fedor. I expect the timing to be there for Mitrione, and I expect him to catch the last Emperor, and we'll see what Bellator decides to do with Fedor after that. I don't know if this is a cash grab for Fedor, or maybe just a farewell to the fans, but man, Matt Mitrione, like you said, he's no slouch. I fully expect him to be on the top of his game and go in there and probably knock Fedor out in the first couple of rounds.
Scott Coker, for whatever reason, has been able to work his magic twice and been able to, bring Fedor to the States, unlike Dana White in the UFC. Now, whether or not that's because Dana White and the UFC are very strong-minded, which they are, and stubborn, which they can be, on the deal that they want to present Fedor, or if Scott Coker really just knows how to sweeten the deal a little bit to say, okay, because I have to look at the poster again, but I don't see, like, M1 Global shattered all over the poster for Bellator, for the official Bellator poster. I know that was something Dana always talked about, was they didn't want to do a co-promotion with Fedor's promotion group. But when I'm looking at him in Bellator, all this, you know, I'm not seeing anything of his. Now, again, I don't know if that's because Scott Coker and, what is it, Viacom. I don't know if they're just throwing so much money at Fedor. He's like, all right, well, I don't need a co-promotion. Or if they just know how to negotiate properly with him. We'll see.
Well, if you remember back in the day when Fedor was fighting for Strikeforce, those were co-promotions. You did see Strikeforce and M1 Global present. But then again, this is when Fedor was at the top of his game. This is when Fedor was, you know, one of the most expensive fighters to sign, if you will. Now, if you remember the story of Dana White saying, I went to this island and tried to sign this guy, and, you know, I offered him an insane amount of money, and they didn't take it. And he told Fedor's management, he said, this guy's one punch away from being worth nothing. And sure enough, you know, he goes in on a 3-fight losing skid in the Strikeforce, and Fedor just kind of starts to decline. Now, maybe that's what happened. Maybe the management said, okay, you know, we've kind of cashed in on our cow, and that's really it. Maybe Fedor's kind of said, you know, I'm going in on my own and just kind of trying to cash in on the last few years that I have, you know, to build on my name.
Now, you know what? That is true. Strikeforce was a minute ago, and we know as time goes on, the memory starts to fade away a little bit. But I'm scrolling through here. I know I got to save somewhere. I got to try to find it as we're doing the show, but I just, it didn't stand out to me as far as the M1 goal was with the Bellator cross-promotion, but be that the main, Fedor is there, he's in Bellator. Whether or not we see the old Fedor or we see the most recent one that looks a little chinny, a little pudgy in the gut, that is going to be curious, because Mitch Mitrione's got the knockout power to beat him, but Mitch Mitrione has shown history. Now, I know that was in his UFC days, but he's shown history. When he's taken on big-name fighters or been in the big fight, came up short every time. So, will he fold him under pressure, right, like the big names standing across him? Or has Bellator been a place where he found himself? He was 2-0 there with 2 stoppages, and he can capitalize on it and say, hey, I'm a legit fighter, and I'm taking that next step, and then hopefully getting a title shot after. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is absolutely a do-or-die for Matt Mitrione. Like you say, he always kind of folds under the pressure of the big fight. And, man, there's no bigger fight for him than there is in Fedor. So how do you not build your brand off a big win on, you know, the Emperor, the biggest heavyweight of all time? So, yeah, this is absolutely do-or-die for Matt Mitrione. I fully expect him to go in there and handle business and, you know, build a bigger brand of Matt Mitrione going forward and perhaps fight for a title and whoever the champion is in Bellator. I mean, they have basically no heavyweight division, but if Matt Mitrione is...
They got Ted Turnbull and they got Bobby Lashley. We're talking about the TNA world champion.
Right, some of the best heavyweights in MMA history. So, like I'm saying, is if Matt Mitrione wins and he knocks out Fedor in impressive fashion, he's your biggest heavyweight. He's probably one of your biggest stars in Bellator now. So, build him up after that.
No, definitely. I mean, Mitrione's got the personality to where if he is successful here, he is going to do much. We saw him on the MMA or whatever.
He's a very well-spoken guy. He's very likable.
Exactly.
He's a guy that you can absolutely, you know, throw your eggs in that basket and build a big star out of him.
No, exactly. So with the victory, he certainly would be someone that the promotion can get behind and build up. So I'm pointing at the poster here. Yeah, am I deceiving me?
No, not for this one. I don't see M1 Global connected to this at all. But, I mean, back to the original point, is we remember when Dream was around in Japan?
Yeah.
It was the resurrection of Pride. Strikeforce was co-promoting with Dream as well. I mean, they brought in Gilbert Melendez. They brought in Shinya Aoki. They brought all these guys from Japan, and they were co-promoting Strikeforce. And that just goes to show why Scott Coker has this aura that he's a fighter's promoter. Because, you know, he's willing to make the fights that the people want to see, and he's willing to pay these guys, and he doesn't care if he has to co-promote. That's something that we never saw from the UFC, and we probably never will, at least under the helm of Dana White. So this is what really is standing Bellator, that's really keeping them, you know, not toe-to-toe with the UFC, but, you know, it's keeping them in a very solid second place. Yeah.
It's bringing them up there, that's for sure. I'll say signing fighters with a big name, that helps bring in hardcore MMA fans, but it also helps with casual fans because they can relate to it more. Oh, yeah, Vanilla Silver or Fedor or Rampage. Okay, cool. Because these are pretty cool names. Axe Murderer, Last Emperor, Rampage. So it will draw you in. The only thing that Bellator has really been lacking is the execution from their main event stars. Gracie Shamrock, Kimbo Dada, Ortiz Sonnen. If they can get away with throwing on some of these events without the controversy at the end where it looks sketchy for, you know, conspiracy theorists out there to say, oh, it was rigged and fixed. If they can get away from that, I think their product will be looked at as a lot better because we saw when Rory McDonald made his debut over Paul Daly, how good of a performance that was. Guys like Michael Chandler, Pitbull. So they have some good fighters there. And with the casual fans being willing to watch it, and it's on Spike TV, if they could just get away from the lackluster main event from their older fighters, and they could stay away from the controversial finishes, I think Bellator, not only are they number two, but pretty soon in the next couple of years, they might be competing with the UFC on a legit scale. Now, of course, the UFC is always going to have the upper hand, but Bellator's showing we're here to stay, and we don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. So Fedor versus Mitrione is a good one. I want to ask you this one. For Fedor's debut, is Matt Mitrione the right opponent, though? Because what I was thinking was a good fighter that I would have liked to enjoy would have been Rampage. Especially that his last fight against Timo was a heavyweight. I would have loved to have seen, now maybe we still get it, maybe we do, but I'd love to see the two former Pride sluggers go at it in Bellator. Is Matt Mitrione the right opponent, or should they maybe go someplace else? Somebody who might be a little bit more of a pushover, not going to set him up, but just saying, or somebody with maybe a bigger name that fans will recognize.
Well, I think we both agree that Rampage Jackson is certainly the bigger name. This is the guy that's recognized a lot more among the casual fans and just, you know, the fans in general, really. You know, Matt Mitrione is not the guy that's really been up there in the marquee fights, you know, so people don't really know him. But, you know, I don't know that Matt Mitrione is necessarily the wrong name. Maybe the Rampage Jackson would have been the better name. It might have been a better build-up, but, I mean, like we talked about earlier, Bellator's not building anybody up anyway. So, you know, I think they're putting their eggs in the basket that, hey, this is the return of Fedor and not necessarily thinking so much about who he's going to fight, just the fact that Fedor's fighting in New York City.
Definitely. Like I said, win or lose, if this is not just a one-off for Fedor and he continues to fight, I would love it if we get to see Fedor versus Rampage. Fedor versus maybe a Bobby Lashley. Hell, Fedor versus Vanderlei. That'll be an awesome fight. Again, a lot goes on as far as if these fighters will continue to go on. Will Fedor and Vanderlei continue to go on going forward? We think they will. We shall see. Also on the card, we got lightweight champion Michael Chandler putting his belt on the line against Brent Primus. We got welterweight champion Douglas Lima putting his title on the line against another fighter making his debut for Bellator, Lorenz Larkin, who really was underappreciated in the UFC. Of these two title matches, Chandler and Lima putting their belt on the line, which one of them is in the most trouble of losing their strap?
Man, you got to say something about Lorenz Larkin. I mean, this is a guy that I was completely flabbergasted that the UFC let go in free agency. And Bellator, I mean, they're always there to just pick up the pieces and run with it. And they're giving Lorenz Larkin an immediate title shot coming straight off the UFC. Brilliant move right there. Like, my only gripe with Bellator is just that they don't build up their fights enough on fight week or just leading up to the fights. But as far as their free agency acquisitions go, I mean, they've been absolutely on point. Lorenz Larkin is absolutely a legitimate fighter. He's coming off a couple of wins in the UFC, including Jorge Masvidal, who's, you know, he was on a tear at 155. He even, you know, he competed very well in, at 170 up until he hit the Damian Maia brick wall. So Lorenz Larkin, you know, how do you not see that guy really doing big things in Bellator? I expect him to win this weekend and continue, you know, a good run of fights in Bellator as champion.
No, certainly. I mean, Lorenz Larkin was one of those fighters that just couldn't get past that middle of the pack with the UFC. And, you know, he was in two divisions, middleweight and welterweight, where it is just stacked to the gills with top talent. So it's really hard. You would need the guys in front of you to lose a fight, at least like one or two to lose a fight, before you can really start moving up. You look at the Robert Whittaker in the UFC, how he's been able to move up. Well, Weidman's lost. Machida's been out of circle. Anderson Silva's there, but he hasn't looked that good in his last couple of bouts. So Luke Rockhold's been injured. Jacare, you know, then he gets a Jacare bout. So it really worked in his favor. Larkin just couldn't get that break in the UFC, but he is a dynamic striker. What really, to me, one of the toughest strikers to prepare for, because he kind of throws that single John Jones oblique kick, but he throws it to the stomach at times. And he doesn't just throw it to your quad. He throws it to the stomach. So you're thinking it might come to your leg. And then, you know, boop, it's even right there in the gut. And that is a killer if you watch some of the breakdown of it. So I'm very curious about seeing that fight as well. But I'll tell you, this Michael Chandler guy, as good as he is, and he is a beast. This guy, Brent Primus, is somebody to look out for. 7-0, 4 submissions. So he's somebody that Chandler can't take lightly, but at 7 fights, so you got to wonder, is that enough experience in the cage to take on somebody of Chandler's credibility? The guy has been there with Pitbull, been there with Eddie Alvarez. I mean, wars with these guys. So he clearly is one of the best lightweights in the world, regardless of promotion. But there was a Mexican-American fighter in the heavyweight division, right? So it is different. Except on Brock Lesnar, he only had a handful of fights. In fact, Brock Lesnar only had a handful of fights, and they both won the title, and Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar. So maybe we see an upset here, but I'm with you. I think the Douglas Lima and the Lorenz Larkin, that's got potential to be the fight of the night right there. If they both come out and really live up to what we expect to see from them, because sometimes, as you and I both know, fights, as good as they look on paper, sometimes don't deliver in the cage. Hopefully this is one of them, because Lorenz, he's certainly somebody to look forward to in this promotion. Speaking of somebody to look forward to, I don't know if you know this kid, but there's somebody making their, not only their Bellator debut, but their professional mixed martial arts debut. And this kid right here, we'll see if the hype is real. But Aaron Pico, the American wrestler, 20 years old, quit high school, went to home school so that he could train professionally with collegiate wrestlers so that he can get ready for the Olympics, making his MMA debut against Zach Freeman. What do you think about the hype behind Aaron Pico? You excited? You think he's overhyped? You're not looking forward to it? Because, you know, as fans, we don't like somebody with too much hype. What are your thoughts about Aaron Pico finally making his debut?
I think this is a really smart move for Bellator to put this guy opening the main event. I mean, yeah, like you said, he's making his MMA debut, so, you know, the expectations are a little bit, you know, we're gonna hold off on too high of expectations on this guy. But like you say, I mean, he's been absolutely tearing through the wrestling world, and a lot of people are really high on this kid. So, you know, brilliant move by Bellator to put him in the opening slot of the pay per view, and we're gonna see what becomes of Aaron Pico in Bellator.
No, most certainly is that if from wrestling, he's got a gold medal in the Cadet World Championships in 2013, a silver medal in the Junior World Championships in 2014, and a bronze in 2015. So he's got the wrestling potential for sure. Probably look for a wrestling-based offense from him. But he's also trained in boxing, and he's been training MMA for a minute. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, I heard about this kid, where they were showing a story, I was like 15 or 16, where, you know, he left high school, traditional high school, so that he could get homeschooled. So he was able to train with the guys in California and Colorado because he had Olympic aspirations. And really, with his skill set on the mat, they were saying this kid might be one of the best young wrestler prospects he's had in a number of years. And he talked about wanting to do some MMA. He was talking about possibly doing some boxing. We'll see how it turns out for him. And I agree with you. Pulling him as the opening bout of the main card on the pay-per-view is smart because it gives people somebody to look forward to as far as like, hey, this guy could be the future, but being as open and fight, your expectations won't be so high. Like, oh, they're putting everything behind this kid. So I do like his placement on the card there. Speaking of placement on the card, Pico making his debut is the opening bout for the main card. The main event for the prelim card that will be on Spike TV, light heavyweight champion Phil Davis defending his title against, yet again, Bellator debut, Ryan Bader. What do you think about these two former collegiate wrestlers, former UFC contenders in that division? Now these guys are fighting for gold in Bellator. What do you think about Davis and Bader matchup?
You absolutely have to love Scott Coker. I mean, who is not going to get excited to possibly buy a pay-per-view when they're getting a championship fight on free TV on Spike? So, you know, you're already getting a title shot, and then, you know, the main event is four or five fights away. So, man, like, absolutely genius move. They're just missing their promoting game on Fight Week. But, yeah, this is absolutely brilliant move. We're going to see a title fight in the main event of a free card against two former UFC fighters who have already fought before, and it was a bit of a dud in that fight. But both of these guys are promising to, you know, deliver a better show, and this is for a strap. So, I mean, this is for everything on the line.
Well, these guys did face each other. Bader was a victor, now won back at 2015. That was Phil Davis' last bout in the UFC. Just coming to Bellator, he's 4-0. He saw off his Bellator career kind of like he did in the UFC. High and heavy. He got a Kimura submission over Emmanuel Nunes, a knockout over Francis Camus. Then his last little fight against King Mo and Liam McGarry kind of went how the rest of his UFC career went. He went back to the wrestling, went back to the hold, went back to holding guys down, keeping tight games. Not really fan-friendly style of fighting. And, you know, with Phil Davis, just talking about Phil Davis fighting, those off there, once again, watching him fight, it was like taking a double shot of Z-Quil mixed with NyQuil. He's a legit top-level fighter. John doesn't always have the most exciting fighting style. Will him and Ryan Bader, as you said, was a dud. Will they make up for that and go for broke this time around, or will they play it safe? We're going to have to see, but at least that'll be on free TV. At least that we're not paying for.
So, yeah, they are putting a lot of stock on these two guys to hopefully deliver, because if you see a dud of a title fight, then, you know, Are people who are still on the fence about buying a pay-per-view, are they really going to fork up the $50 to buy the rest of the card if these guys really don't deliver? I don't expect that to be the case. I think these guys already know who each other is. And, you know, they're going to go in there and hopefully they're going to go in there and just, you know, lay it all on the line and fight like a true championship fight and try to excite the fans. And, man, this is for a strap this time, so there's a difference. They're not fighting for a number one contender slot where if I lose, everything's completely lost. This is for the big title, so, hey, go at it and try to excite the fans and try to build a bigger name for yourself. Now, as far as Phil Davis's last fight, if you have the wrestling credentials of a Phil Davis, are you going to go in there and stand against Liam McGarry? This guy's absolutely one of the scariest light heavyweights out there in the stand-up game. So I don't really fault Phil Davis for going in there with a more conservative game plan. The fact is, he won. Now he's a champion. Now he's being put on a main slot in a big card. So, yeah, kudos to Phil Davis for getting that strap. And now let's see if he can defend it against the guy he already lost to once before.
I'm not going to knock the guy for getting the victory and playing the smart game. I'm not going to knock you for that because that's smart. But as a consumer of the product, I do have a right to say whether I enjoyed it or not. And no, I don't enjoy watching Phil Davis fight all that often. You know, when he first came to Bellator, I thought, oh, wait a minute, maybe he's got that fire lit on him again. And he said, you know what? I got more to my arsenal than just pulling guys to the ground and staying on top of them. Let me show you guys. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll get behind this Phil Davis. But I knew it. I knew it was fool's gold. The grass was not green on the other side. I knew eventually he'd go back and show us, oh, that's why the UFC was willing to let you go. And granted, you know, nothing against being let go, because as we see now in today's landscape, it's more of a business. It's kind of like with pride in the UFC. Some guys get let go because they want to be let go. Like, dude, I'd rather leave and go to the other place where I can get paid better and treated better, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously it's worked out for Phil Davis. So we got two wrestlers here who throughout their entire career has never really improved their stand-up game. Ryan Bader, he got decent power. But if you look at his stand-up game and how he delivers it, it is basically drills, drills, drills. None of it comes off flowing. None of it comes off natural. And that's what Phil Davis is about. Remember, I can't remember who the fight was against, but he had a fight in the UFC against a Brazilian fighter. And he was saying how he was working on his stand-up. And basically, all he did was 1-2. In fact, it was Vinny Magalhães.
Magalhães.
There you go, Magalhães. Where he stood up with them and was like, oh, yeah, I want to show you guys how to improve my stand-up game. You know, it was the most boring stand-up game we've ever seen in our lives. Gosh, man, we have spent this much time talking about Bellator. What is the world come to? Okay, let's wrap up Bellator. We got James Gallagher taking on Chinzo. Machida, Lito Machida's brother. This should be an interesting matchup. They had an intense stare down at the Williams today. We also got Naaman Gracie on the card. Ted Hardy is going to be on the card as well. Ryan Couture, son of UFC Hall of Famer and legend. Ryan, the natural Couture, is going to be on there. Bellator did go ham with this card and said, we're going to give you guys some good matchups and some good names that you guys could be aware of or should be aware of. So I'm excited for this fight. I'm looking forward to this fight card. Hopefully it delivers. And excuse me. And we're able to walk away from this one without a sour taste of controversy in our mouth. From Bellator in New York City. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. This has been one of the monkeys that has been hanging on Bellator's back, is that everybody's always calling for controversy in these main events, and that's because they've been putting on these weird fights, you know, like a Kimbo Slice against the Dada 5000. I mean, what really do you expect? This is not high-level MMA, so that's why people are weirded out when they see something weird in the cage. So I think that they put a very legitimate card together this time around. And it's hopefully going to deliver for them. And, you know, it really better because, I mean, Bellator doesn't often go into the pay-per-view format. So they're really going to want this to deliver for them. And I think they put a very solid card. And now, you know, it's in the hands of the fighters to deliver the fights.
Now, most certainly. Now, Bellator isn't the only promotion put on the fight card this weekend. We got the UFC Fight Night 112. You know,
does the UFC exist also? I forgot about them.
Well, considering how the show is, you would think that the UFC wasn't around anymore. We do apologize out there. People just couldn't stand the Bellator talk. But it's worth talking about. The big card, a lot of big fights in there. We had to dive into it. But it's a pretty nice card that the UFC put on here in OKC. Basketball's not there anymore. Thank God we don't have to see Russell Westbrook out there before and after the games anymore in the press conference.
Excuse me, sir. Yes, we do, because Kevin Lee is going to be on this card.
Well, you know what? Okay. Okay, we're going to see Russell Westbrook, not Junior, his brother, dressing like him. But you know what? No, I won't. You know why? Because we're Reebok.
And that is true. But we did see, well, no, because we're going to be seeing the buildup. Because, I mean, these guys went at it at the press conference, so we're going to be seeing those replays. So we're going to be seeing Kevin Lee in that horrible outfit that he decided to wear a few weeks ago.
hey, you know what? If nothing else, if it wasn't for the fight, you was going to remember that he had that horrible outfit on at the press conference. We're talking about Kevin Lee and Michael Chiesa is going to be in the main event here, a lightweight showdown. This is an interesting matchup right here because when you first see it, this is like a hardcore fan's main event. This is something that, you know, these aren't two fighters that have made the big headways just yet in their division. Michael Chiesa, unfortunately, has been out for over a year with an injury. Kevin Lee, you know, he built up some momentum for him, but then he lost. So he's on a 4-5 win streak right now. But because of that press conference, the summer kickoff, where they just explode. I mean, Daniel Cormier and John Jones were going at it as expected, but then when Kevin Lee got the mic, I mean, he went off. And then Chiesa got on the mic, and then he went off. And then all of a sudden, you know, mamas were thrown around, punches were flying, and it was just, it was crazy, and it was madness, but it's given this fight a lot of proper build-up for it. I always felt like it was a misunderstanding of what was said. Kevin Lee was saying, look, your mom's going to be there, and before he could finish saying, she's going to see me kick your ass. Chelsea was just like, hey, don't talk about my mama. I'm not talking about your mama. I'm just stating. Out of all the fans in OKC that's going to be there, she's going to be one of them. But I understand, you know, your mom, your wife, anytime immediate family comes into play, you kind of don't want to hear nobody else mention. Don't mention my wife, my kids, or my husband, not female fighters, or my parents, and we're good. But this one is interesting in the sense that Kevin Lee is a grappler. You look at his record, you know, you look at it, first off, you look at his physique. I'm like an amateur bodybuilder. It looks like he got some power, which I'm not saying he doesn't. But his fighting style is grappling based. Takes guys down, submits you, ground and pound you. Chiesa is a very good submission grappler as well. So is this going to be two grapplers giving up a very good grappling match? Or is the grappling going to cancel each other out? We may not be able to see a Spanish bloodfest. What do you think?
Well, as a grappling fan myself, I can only hope that we're going to be seeing a good grappling fight.
You and Joe Rogan.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, two high-level grapplers going at it and just, you know, I have an answer for your A and you have an answer for my B. And then, you know, it just becomes a really good flow of good grappling. So, yeah, I would love to see a good ground game as much as I would love to see a good stand-up fight. I mean, like you said, these guys are not necessarily known for their stand-up games, but Kevin Lee has a lot of power in his hands. He's knocked people out. So, yeah, I mean, I'll take a good fight as it comes. And, man, these guys are probably both knocking on the door of title contendership. I mean, maybe not next, but maybe one or two fights away for either guy. When Michael Chiesa beats Jim Miller, I mean, that really put him on the map for a lot of people. And then, unfortunately, he went on a long layoff, you know, not long after that. So we finally get to see him back. And, you know, as we were watching that press conference, I think both of us were kind of cringing a little bit. We were like, God, what are these guys doing? But at the same time, that little back and forth that they had, it's really being built up and promoted by the UFC. And now both of us are more excited to see the fight because of that stuff. So, hey, you know, good for these guys. They're headlining an event on the same night that Bellator's putting on a fight. But, hey, it's their opportunity for them to really put their names out there and get into that top five contendership in one of the most stacked divisions in the UFC.
No, definitely. That division is so stacked. I think it'll take at least two victories for either one of them to get a title shot. Remember, you still got Khabib, who's undefeated. Still got Makeweight. Still got Ferguson. You got Nate Diaz if he ever decides to come back, which we'll get to his news a little bit later. But that division is just stacked with talent. But, yeah, they both are on a nice win streak. Chiesa was on a 3-5 win streak. Last loss was in 2014. But he hasn't fought since April of last year. So it has been a while since he's been in there. Will the rust be there? Or like Dominic Cruz, the ring rust doesn't exist. It's about how you train and your mental mindset when you go in there. He's 7-2 in the UFC. Look over at Kevin Lee. This is another guy who's a very good wrestler. And he's applied it very well to his overall game. 15-2 overall. He's on a 4-5 win streak. His last loss was in 2015. But since then, you know, he's routed off four. Three of them have been by finishes. TKO, technical submission, and another submission. So he's ever improving his game as well. With the trash talking, like you said, it really does add more sizzle to this card than what it was before, which is unfortunate. You look at this card, you got a former champion in Johnny Hendricks on here. You got a former two-division champion and a Hall of Famer on here in BJ Penn. And yet it just kind of seemed like, whatever. But now you look at that, and then you look at the card, and you say, they got Johnny Hendricks on there and Tim Boach. They got BJ Penn. They got Tim Means. They got Jen. It's a pretty good card. So as much as some people may not like the theatrics of the trash talking and getting into it at the press conference, it does add to the event itself and make it something where you kind of do want to watch it now. Now we got to get the double screen TV. Also tour over here, UFC over here. We got to be able to watch both. Or he draw one and do the other. Because I definitely want to check out both and see how this turns out. Obviously, you're a grappling expert here. After 10 days of 10 plans, DGC, you know more.
That's a quote-unquote expert.
Exactly. I mean, that's all you need. And trust me, that's 10 days of jiu-jitsu is a lot more than most people get. No, but all jokes aside, how do you see this match playing out? And who do you think could come out on top of the winner?
I think Michael Chiesa is a star in the making. And I fully expect him to go in there and handle Kevin Lee. Because, I mean, once you get Kevin Lee on his back, I mean, he's got a bit of answers, but not to the level of Michael Chiesa. And this guy can just absolutely do devastating things if he takes your back. And he takes your back so easily, like it's nothing. So if it's going to be a grappling match, as I hope and I expect it will be, I like Michael Chiesa to go in there and impose his game plan against Kevin Lee.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Kevin Lee, being a traditional wrestler, put him on their back like a turtle. It's very hard for them to adjust to that. We've seen that time and time again. But my black card, I'm going to go against the brother, so I automatically have to go for Kevin Lee. So come on, Kevin.
AKA Mr. Russell Westbrook.
Exactly. Trust me, I don't know where the hell they thought that stuff was cool to wear, but hey, it stands out. Plus, Kevin Lee, being a local guy, he was up in Floyd Mayweather before this fight was signed, get ready for Conor McGregor. Doesn't make a lot of sense why he would do that because he's not left-handed. He's more of a wrestling fighter, kind of being a family guy. But he hasn't met.
Maybe Floyd Mayweather was just having Kevin Lee throw phantom kicks that are never going to land, but just getting him ready for that kind of thing. Or maybe he was shooting on him a little bit and just kind of get him his legs ready for it, something like that.
Very possible. Maybe he was trying to get something. Hey, man, put me in a guillotine and a rear naked choke. Well, no, this is Floyd Mayweather. Hey, man, stand behind me and put your arms around my neck like y'all be doing. and so I can see if I got to get out of it in case this sucker, or put me in the head like y'all be doing.
Just get me ready in case this guy tries to do the MMA against me.
Yeah,
because
MMA.
You know, I've never trained UFC before.
No, I've never trained UFC. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. They want me to fight this dude named Ronda Rousey before, and I know who he was.
I don't know who he is.
I know who he was at the time. You hear Joe Rogan say that he thinks Conor McGregor will be a folk hero if he ends up knocking him out with a head kick. Even Randy Couture said he'd love to see Conor throw a head kick.
I
hate to get off the topic, but how would it be if Conor McGregor did go in there and throw a head kick at Floyd Mayweather and let's just say knock him out?
I think Conor McGregor would part with 99% of his money, and he would probably go to jail for assault. Because, I mean, that's just completely out of the rules. So I don't expect Conor McGregor to do something like that. The fact that Joe Rogan's bringing it up just goes to show that you probably shouldn't be smoking 17 blunts before you go on his podcast. That's going to air for a million people. So I don't know what Joe Rogan's really talking about. I mean, I know that he likes to make his podcast like a conversational type of thing where, you know, it would just be two or three friends just talking about whatever. And then some things come out that probably shouldn't come out. I don't really know what was going through his mind when he said he'll be a folk hero if he kicks him and knocks him out.
Yeah, and I get it. You know, he's a comedian, so he's always trying to find the funny and stuff. That's totally understandable, but trust me. Joe Rogan Experience podcast is something we all strive to try to get to as far as achievements and success.
Oh, absolutely. So, one of the most successful podcasts in the history of podcasts.
Exactly. So not trying to knock him at all, but that's probably got to be one of the asinine statements I've ever heard him make. Okay? That's almost as crazy as when he said, MMA needs to go back to having no gloves, no tape around his wrist.
But see, I agree with that because the gloves.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
Come on.
You gotta be kidding.
The gloves are a false sense of security. And
they're 4 ounces. There's not that much damn security to give.
Right. So why put them on in the first place? Then, you know, it'll.
You remember how the UFC was when there was no gloves? Guys barely threw a damn punch. You remember Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn, too?
Yes. And this was before they even had.
So cool. queer test match are just standing there looking at each other's shadows. Hell, they were still looking at each other so much, they were seeing which part of their sweat would go down first. Nobody wanted to see that.
Are you saying you don't miss the days of...
I'm sorry. Are you saying you don't miss the days of 30-minute matches or 40-minute matches?
Oh, I long for those days where 30 minutes,
it
was three strikes, totals thrown. Oh, those were the glory days.
What I'm saying is no gloves would be a lot better for grappling. As you know, I love grappling with my 10 days of experience. But the gloves, just like I said, they give a false sense of security to the fighters, and that's why we're seeing these broken hands all the time, is because these guys are just throwing these punches at the top of the head and breaking their knuckles. So if you have no gloves, it'll be safer. It's like the same concept.
Safer.
Yes. It's the same concept of
breaking my hand with the glove, and now without the glove, I'm not going to break.
So
my
now
hand.
People are not going to be throwing the same kind of punches. Now they're going to be more cautious about how they land their punches.
Oh, you mean they're just not going to throw punches at all? Because we've seen the UFC without gloves. See, it's different when you try to use a football analogy in the past.
Yes.
Because you got rugby. But see, those are two different sports, just like MMA and boxing. But we've seen MMA without gloves. It was not a sport that many people enjoyed.
Well, see, MMA without gloves was also MMA without commissions and MMA without regulations. This is, you know, back in the days of the human cockfighting, as John McCain would have put it. So, you know, this is completely different. What I'm saying is that the gloves are providing the fighters really no security. You know, maybe the tape is good, even though, you know, we recently heard Rory McDonald say that he's never going to tape his hands again because, you know, he doesn't need it or he doesn't feel comfortable taping his hands. Rory McDonald, hey, a Faraz Zahabi product. I mean, to me, yes, Faraz Zahabi, one of the best coaches in MMA.
Yeah, and all of his fighters will put you to sleep. You got trouble sleeping? You have insomnia? Watch Faraz Zahabi fighter fight. Trust me, you will be out.
An excellent jiu-jitsu coach and an excellent stand-up Muay Thai fighter coach. So I love Faraz Zahabi. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're saying.
And all these guys are born. all I'm saying is that you got to look at it like this. The idea of taking away the gloves, think about this. Guys would then have to train in gloves. See, the false sense of security comes from not the four-on gloves. Guys don't train in MMA gloves. They train in boxing gloves. Boxers break their hands, and they got 10-ounce gloves on. Or, you know, it might be bigger gloves at times. But they train with those big gloves. So with those bigger gloves with a little bit more cushion, the punches they throw there, they're trying to throw now with 4-ounce gloves on. That's where the breaking of the hand and the wrist comes from. And also, you got to realize, you can't just specialize in one. It's very hard to be a specialist in something that maybe you didn't start off naturally doing. Anderson Silva, he can be a striking specialist because that's where his base is at. That's where he's come from, Taekwondo and Muay Thai, granted, Jiu-Jitsu as well, but his base is that. Damian Maya, he's never going to be a great striker, but his is Jiu-Jitsu. Tyron Woodley, he's got power. If you look at Tyron Woodley as a tremendous striker or just somebody where he's got enough power where if he lands on you, you could go to sleep. Whereas Stephen Thompson, that's a tremendous striker. So now if you take the glove away, now they have to spare their hands and their wrists in training for that. Now I'm training for wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, judo, taekwondo, whatever. Now I also have to train in bare knuckle fighting.
No, you don't have to train in bare knuckle fighting. Sparring is really a simulation of fighting. I mean, I don't think you know, Jose Aldo and the guys down in Brazil, they really understand that part of sparring.
There's no kill.
Right. These guys are just going in there to kill each other and hey, you know, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that type of training. Training is really a simulation. All about, you know, getting your timing right, putting yourself in these situations, muscle memory. You're not going in there, you know, bare knuckle fighting in your gym.
If you take the gloves away for the fight, but if you don't train in bare knuckles, you're still going to mess up your game.
No, you mentioned it yourself. These guys train in boxing gloves. Nobody's training out there in MMA gloves unless they're doing grappling or MMA training full on. These guys are training in boxing gloves, things that they're not going to be using at all in the octagon or the cage. So, yeah, keep using the boxing gloves to train. And you know, once you get in there in a fight, you know, adjust your game so that you're not breaking your hand on the top of guy's head. You know, don't punch the top of the head.
How you adjust your game? Well, first off, if he ducks while I'm throwing a punch, we've seen that too, where guys duck and I'm just throwing a punch, and that's where it just happened to land. But how am I? So let me get this right. MMA gloves provide a false sense of security for the fighters when they go out there and while they're breaking their hands. They're not throwing the proper technique, this and that. But if you take weighted gloves, train in boxing gloves, but then when you fight without the gloves, you're all of a sudden going to throw better punches?
No, you're not going to be throwing better punches. You're not going to be throwing, leading with the knuckle into the top of the guy's head. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be smarter about your striking. That's just, you know.
Yeah, smarter as in I'm not going to throw any damn strikes because we're bare knuckles. I mean, we've seen what MMA fighters do in the cage when they didn't have gloves on. They didn't throw. Look, back in the day, how many legit strikers can we name? When there wasn't, when you didn't have to wear gloves. How many legit strikers can we name? Maybe one.
Remember Art Jimerson?
Oh, yeah.
One glove.
Art Jimerson. Yeah. How did that work out for him?
He lasted about 15, 17 seconds.
Yeah, about, well, you know what? A little credit, maybe 30.
Hey, he was going in there with one boxing glove and one bare knuckle.
Hey, he was trying to show you, I can do both. I can do padded or unpadded.
He was going in there with one boxing glove because he didn't want to break the knuckle on his power hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart
exactly.
man.
Smart man. But see, wait. Why didn't he just go, no gloves, so he wouldn't break any hand? He'd be forced to throw proper technique punch, not looping punches to the top of the head. No, we've seen it before. And it didn't lead to any good strikers. Look, if you want better grappling, just get better gloves. If you want better grappling, watch EBI. Watch Eddie Bravo Invitational. Watch Metamorphs. Watch that if you want to grab them. This is mixed martial arts for a reason. It's a mixture of all the arts. Now, whatever you specialize in, that's what maybe we see. But if guys are supposed to train in every aspect of fighting, it's very hard to get one to master one specific one to where that's the high level of quality fights we're going to see. And if you do, you're going to end up getting matches like George St. Pierre, where he's wrestling so good, he can dominate you with it. Or where Anderson Silva stands so good, he'll dominate you, but it's where it gets to the point where you're almost like, whoa, oh, okay, all right. So the idea of taking away the gloves so we can get better striking, I think it's ludicrous, or as Mike Tyson would say, ludicrous. And I don't see it. I don't see it because I've seen it without gloves before, and I don't see it. But talking about striking. We talked about the main event, co-main event, Timbo, Johnny Hendricks. Johnny being in middleweight again, second time around. How do you think Johnny's going to fare? He's taking on a very tough opponent, Timbo Cheever. Both of these guys could use a nice win. Are they fighting for pink slips, or are these guys good enough to where whoever loses, unless they really get injured, still is going to be safe on the roster at least for another fight?
I think we saw a bit of a revitalization in Johnny Hendricks' career back at UFC 207. You know, when he fought Hector Lombard, we saw that, you know, he wasn't drawn in so much from a brutal weight cut. Man, like, this is just absolutely what fighters should be doing. Everybody should be moving up one weight class, stop torturing yourself, cutting down weight, and fight at a more natural weight. You know, like, people were saying, you know, maybe Johnny's a little bit too short for the division, but he proved that he's not. I mean, he looked really good against.
We'll see how he does. I mean, Luke Rockhold's a little bit taller.
Yeah, Luke. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if Luke Rockhold should be fighting at 195 if that division ever comes into play, right?
Should be fighting at light. Apparently, according to him, he'll still fight heavyweight.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just fight at super heavyweight.
Yeah, just, hey, you know what? Bring my staff in here. Let's go.
I think that's the Conor McGregor mentality that's probably going to get you knocked out sooner or later.
Yeah, I'll fight anybody, anywhere. It doesn't matter. And, hey, look where he's at, man. $100 million fight coming up. Yeah, I agree with you. Johnny Hendricks moving up in weight was smart for him. I think he waited just a little bit too long. I would like to have seen him do it maybe shortly after his fights against Robbie Lawler because he's had weight cut issues for a while. Talk about somebody who really fell off the cliff. I mean, he was on the rise. On his way to fight George St. Pierre, knocking guys out, finishing guys, loses a controversial decision to George St. Pierre. And then from there, it seemed like all his mojo went with that loss where we start hearing more and more about the weight cut issues, inconsistency, not being a knockout guy. We got used to seeing him, you know, whether or not that's because Mexican supplements were involved beforehand and they got taken away. I'm not saying anything, but, hey, we've seen it with fighters. And Tim Boach, I mean, just when you think this guy's over and done with, he comes out there and he just goes straight medieval Viking on it. I think it's a very good matchup. I like Bojo the fighter, always entertaining, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a good one. Someone could go to sleep. I hope that they're willing to stand up and slug it out and not just hold each other up against the fence in the clinch and think, hey, I mean, granted, I understand I'm playing smart, but I want to see somebody get knocked out of here.
No, I agree with you. I think this is really what turned people off on Johnny Hendricks, was that he was just kind of holding people up against the cage or holding people down and not really doing anything off the ground. You know, I'm a grappling fan myself, but I want to see activity on the ground. I don't want to see people just laying there doing nothing. And that's kind of what Johnny Hendricks became after he lost to George St. Pierre. Remember that prophetic prediction he made after the George St. Pierre loss? He said, this will never happen to me again.
Yeah.
And maybe he changed his mindset and he said, hey, if I have to play it safe, then I have to play it safe. And maybe that's just what his career became after that. And, you know, he started losing fans, but he's looking to revitalize his career. And, you know, there is something to be said about it. He's been wrestling his entire career. He's been cutting weight his entire life. You know, he might have done some permanent damage to his organs. So maybe fighting at a more natural weight for him is going to, you know, push him forward to try to maybe make a title run at 185.
Now, most certainly. Whether or not he did change his fighting style because of that, who knows? But I'll tell you what, he didn't change it for the better.
Right.
He changed it actually for the worse, which is interesting because his first fight against Robbie Lawler, I know he had a bicep injury, but he stood up with him. It was a great fight. He actually won. And then when he tried to go the safe route, that's when he lost. So, yeah, being at 185, it's a more natural weight class for him. Hopefully he can make a run here, whether it's for a title shot. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal. Johnny Hendricks is an exciting fighter where you just want to see him put on some good performance, not just rustling up everybody. But we'll see how it is. Like I said, Tim Oates is a very tough fighter. This is somebody who you know. If you want to test, what would you got? Name testicle fortitude of somebody in the division, you get a fighter like Tim Oates in there with them. And he's going to push you to say, are you ready to take that next step or are you not? And I'm going to end up beating your ass. So we're going to see how this plays out. Felice Herring is also on the card. I was surprised that the poster didn't have a blurred out picture of her. She's someone who does not mind promoting herself through social media with, you know, pictures and videos. I like her personality. She is someone, she puts it out there. She's a power girl in front of Wrigley Field a couple of weeks ago. She's very open to letting people see her life and her training. I like it. We'll see how it turns out for her. She's taking on Justine Kish. Kish, right?
Kish.
Kish. Okay, Kish.
Straight out of the 808.
Oh, see, there you go. Shoot, bro. So we got to see how it goes for the Hawaiian girl. Look, I feel kind of bad. I didn't even know that she was from Hawaii. No, she's not.
Well, she's trained with...
this girl's from Russia.
She's trained with... What's her name? Max Holloway.
Is that where she's fighting out of, or is she trained? Or she just trained there a couple of times?
She's trained with Max Holloway, I believe.
Okay, well, she ain't fighting out there anyway, but hey, at least she's been there, so hey, right on. But this girl right here, 8-2 as a kickboxer, so we know her stand-up is legit. And 6-0 as a fighter. Now, she doesn't got 4 decisions, but hey, we'll see how it goes for her at least right here. This could be a good one. We also got Tim Means taking on Alex Garcia in this one. This, you know, again, this is one of those matchups where, you know, not necessarily two of the biggest names on the card, but two names and two fighters who could certainly put on a good scrap here. This might be an interesting matchup, maybe a potential for fight of the night. Performance of the night. What do you think?
Yeah, Tim Means, I mean, he's looked a little bit on and off in his last couple of fights. I mean, he's had some weird fights with Alex Oliveira. And, you know, like I said, he's been up and down. You know, he's always got that power behind him that he can rely on. But, you know, is this really a fight that's going to propel either guy up the rankings? I don't really think so. You know, Alex Garcia is still a little bit, you know, the same deal as Tim Means, really. He's just kind of up and down in that division. And, you know, two guys are probably just going to go in there and slug it out and look for a quick knockout.
Well, hey, I got no problem trying to go in there and slug it out, look for a quick knockout. I definitely would love to see it. I know the fans would love to see it. We need a couple. I truly believe you need a couple, not only fighters, but you need a couple of matchups like that, third card. A couple fights where you know We don't know how the rest of the cards are going to go, but we know this particular fight, or these two particular fights, these guys are going to go at it, and they're going to slug it out. Somebody's going to go night-night. Now, this is, I want to say, one of the more sadder fights on the card, just because of where he was, where he is now. As far as looking at the fight card lineup, he's the opening bout for the main card at Fox Sports 1. Danny Seaver is going to be taking on UFC Hall of Famer BJ Penn. Why is BJ falling so far? Seaver, man, what do you think?
Well, are we going to be seeing a motivated BJ? Is BJ going to have that look in his eye, that real look in his eye, you know, as he's coming out with his Hawaiian music? I mean, we really haven't seen much out of him in the last few years, and he's been a lot of talk over you know, his last couple of fights, and he just hasn't delivered. He looked very amateurish, not amateurish, but just over the hill against a young fighter in his last fight, and I think BJ is just kind of, you know, trying to maybe see if he can just retire on a win. He doesn't want to retire on a loss. I mean, like we've seen, he's had 4 or 5 losses in a row. So maybe this is just his farewell fight, and he just doesn't want that kind of distraction, so he's not putting it out there. But this, I mean, it's a more manageable fight against Dennis Seaver. But hang it up, BJ.
If he wanted to retire on a win, then he should have retired in 2010, because that was the last time BJ Penn got a win, was in 2010. UFC 123 against Matt Hughes. And by that point, Matt Hughes was at the end of his career anyway, but it was the end of the trilogy series. From there, he's on 0-4-1, and it has not been pretty whatsoever. Now, granted, three of those fights were welterweight, and one of them, Nick Diaz, was a fight tonight. Back then, you could still call it that. So, and it was a very good performance there. It was close enough. Even though the unanimous decision was close enough to where some people thought maybe BJ had that third round been a little bit better for him, maybe he could have got out the victory there. But Roy McDonald really put a beat down on him and sent him into his first retirement, or no, like his second retirement. But then, for some reason, he got into his mind he's going to come back at featherweight. And both times, against Frankie Edgar and Yari Rodriguez, he's come back and has looked slower. And you would think, okay, now I'll be lighter on my feet, so I'm actually going to be the bigger guy in this matchup at 145 as opposed to 155. I'm going to be lighter on my feet. Okay, let's go. Nope, he looks slow. He looks old. He looks depleted. And honestly, look, as a Hawaiian, I know I should be saying this. I know I said, you know, earlier with Kevin Lee, my black hair won't allow me to go against him. I'm going to be completely honest. I've never really been a big BJ fan. I never saw him as someone who I consider to be an elite fighter. By elite, I mean you're beating other elite guys, not just beat guys. Because when he was lightweight champion, he ran through a number of guys. But do we really look at fighters such as Joe Stevenson, Sean Schreck, Kenny Florian, Diego Sanchez? Do we look at those guys as elite fighters? No. Very good fighters, but elite? No. But every time he fought the elite guys, the GSPs, Matt Hughes, when Matt Hughes was actually didn't overlook him, Frank Yeager, he always came up short. And I just always looked at him as somebody who, he's got the heart fighting at welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight. I give him all the credit in the world, but he's somebody who always let, I think, his own ego, pride, and bought into his own hype derail his true potential of what he could have been. Great athletic specimen. Flexibility, jiu-jitsu, black belt at 3 years, first American to win a major jiu-jitsu tournament.
And up until just recently, he was the youngest American to ever do it, up until, you know, Mikey Musumeci, who's now living in Las Vegas. I met him last weekend. And he just did it as a 20-year-old when BJ had done it as a 21-year-old. I mean, BJ is the stuff that legends are made of, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, I've never been a huge fan of myself either, but I can appreciate what BJ has done for sport. I mean, he's been absolutely incredible. He fought Lyoto Machida at some crazy light heavyweight catch weight. I mean, who does that? I mean, Lyoto Machida used to be a sumo wrestler. Yeah, he got his ass whooped. But the fact is, BJ is just one of those guys who's just going to make you believe that the impossible is possible. And he's the ultimate heartbreaker because you know, a lot of times he just comes up short, and, you know, you just feel like you got again by BJ Penn. You know, this
and
motivated,
again.
Yeah.
And again.
This motivated BJ Penn, who's got that crazy look in his eye, and he's, you know, you just want to see him lick the blood off his gloves. You know,
how's that crazy eye look done to him lately?
Not lately, but that's what I'm saying is that that's what people buy into, and that's, you know, he's just a guy who captures people's imaginations. They love to see him fight. Unfortunately, he just comes up short, and lately, over the last 5-6 years, we've seen that he's just not a guy who's willing to call it when he should be calling it. So, you know, hopefully you can retire with a victory, but retire.
Brought this up last week on the show. If he chooses to go on, one, he needs to move back to lightweight. Two, he needs to do kind of what Bellator is doing. Just take the fan fights. Don't go after contention fights. Don't go after contenders. Go after guys who are a little bit older and seem like yourself who are not title contenders, but you just didn't get a chance to face them. I'd love to see him and Gomi go out. Gomi still in the UFC.
That'd be great.
Why not, hey, say one more fight for both of you guys, a retirement type by BJ, come back up to 155, because you look kind of sickly there at 145, and let's do it, man. Let's do two legends who just never got a chance to go at it. Fights like that, I'm
right.
That's why I would be like, you know what, that is better. And we talked about even with Vitor Belfort, there's no need for him to take on the new Brockhold with Jocko Reyes or Romero. But him taking on the middle to lower pack of the guys, or at least guys like maybe like a Lyoto Machida who are a little older and they're not going to get another title shot, that would make more sense going forward for BJ Penn. And no disrespect to Dennis Seaver here. He's a very good fighter, very good veteran, one of the best spin back kicks in the game. It's just, it's sad to see a Hall of Famer reduced to not only a Fox Sports 1 card, but as I said, looking at it on paper, the opening bout of the main card.
Right.
You know, you won't see Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, George St. Pierre. You won't see these guys doing it. For BJ to be where he was at, to where he is now, he's just long off of race.
No, I agree. And this is a fight that really does nothing for BJ. You know, if he gets a win over Dennis Seaver, okay, you got to win over Dennis Seaver. Yeah. Maybe in his mind, he's thinking, hey, it took Conor McGregor 2 rounds to beat this guy. Maybe if I beat him in 1, I'll get a title shot at 155 against Conor. Exactly. Maybe that's what it's going through his mind. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Gomi would be an absolutely more interesting fight. Or maybe like a Shinya Aoki, you know, bring him back to the UFC and have him fight a legend like BJ. It would make a lot more sense to build up a fight like that as opposed to Dennis Seaver, who's really not going to do much for BJ in terms of accolades.
Now, I know it's a long ways away. I always go to Bellator, have a couple local mocos, go down to Zippy's, nice little restaurant.
I had no Zippy's.
Okay. Oh, my God. That's
good chili.
Fried chicken. Well, yeah, that chili. Oh! You get a couple of them plates, though. Surf plates. Move up to middleweight. Maybe even light heavyweight. Yeah, you did before. Hey, man, there's Chael Sonnen. There's Wanderlei Silva. Some of them old guys.
Well, and don't forget, this is Bellator. So if they decide to go to Hawaii, they'll probably just have the fights on the beach. They'll put just some bleachers, probably some floating bleachers out in the ocean,
yeah.
And then, you know,
yeah.
BJ's going to be fighting on the beach.
They probably would. They got, hey, we got to wait for the current to go down a little bit, guys. Hold on, a little delay. That would be interesting, but you're right. Knowing Bellator, they probably would do something like that. Old WCW tactics right there. Also on the card, we got Clay Guida. Not going to lie, did not. When was the last time Clay Guida had a fight? I'm pulling it up right now. But at 35 years old, he doesn't seem that old, but he has been around forever. His last fight, last year, but his last one was 2015. He's on a 2-fight losing streak. He's 1-3 in his last 4. So he's somebody as well, up and down. Why not Clay Guida? Clay Guida would have been a nice one. We also got former women's strawweight champion Carla Esparza, also the former Ultimate Fighter winner, Carla Esparza. She's going to be on the card as well. Talk about somebody who fell from grace. This was one-time champion and the winner of the Ultimate Fighter. And now she's on the prelims. But if I'm not mistaken, she did have a long layoff from the injuries. Excuse me. Took a beating against Ronnie and Jacek. Her last match, she lost to Ronda Marcos by split decision. But she's 1-2 in the UFC. Well, technically 2-2 for the Ultimate Fighter champion against Rosa Nunez. So we'll see if she can get bounced back on the horse and get back into the winning column, or if she'll continue to slide down. This is a pretty good card. you know, but we got Bellator in New York City, UFC in Oklahoma City. This is a pretty good card as well. Some interesting names on there. Interesting to see what, you know, for when you look at this card, outside of the main event, none of these fights really look like, as you said earlier, like a win is going to propel you that far up the rankings or whatnot. And more so seems like for some of these matches, a loss might just get you a pink slip out the door, but we'll see how it goes. Some news outside the cage as we're wrapping up the show here. Nate Diaz is being sued by former agents. Apparently, the money he made against Conor McGregor, UFC Tour 2, he was hoarding some of the money. We know Nate Diaz loves his money. Damn, loves it that much? What do you make about Nate Diaz being taken to court?
Yeah, I really haven't paid too much attention to the story. I saw the headlines, and I was surprised. Like, why is Nate Diaz being sued for $1 million over a fight that happened like almost a year ago now? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not well versed into the details of this story, but hopefully they'll settle something, and you know, it's not going to keep Nate out of the cage for another 16 years like he plans on staying out.
Conspiracy theorists are already saying that Dana White planted the story so that Nate Diaz would be forced to get back into the cage so that he could fight again. Apparently, you know, I mean, Tony Ferguson is doing everything he can to call him out. Say, he'll stalk and slap him, he's a bitch, he's scared, this and that, don't be scared, homie. Diaz ain't biting the bait yet. We'll see if maybe if they attempt to go to court for an expensive, if he potentially loses the money he has to pay out, hey, you got to get back in the cage and earn some of that back.
Right, that's one thing that I immediately thought of is if he's getting sued for $1 million by an agency, you got to think that they have unlimited resources to, you know, just keep appealing and go into court battles. Nate Diaz really can't afford to do that. I mean, he's probably made a boatload of money over the two Conor McGregor fights, but I don't think he's going to really want to go into that route of appealing and going into court battles. So, you know, for his benefit, hopefully this will just get settled and or not. I mean, maybe this means that we'll see Nate Diaz in the cage sooner.
Maybe we will. Maybe we will. That is a possibility. He may make a boatload. He may make a yacht of money in it. So, yeah, hopefully this – not trying to say this should be used as a support, but hopefully this will get him back in here. Some unfortunate news. Former UFC fighter Tim Hayes dies in a boxing match. And obviously, one, we never like to hear news like this of any combat sports athletes, regardless of how you feel about them. You never want to hear about that. Many women are putting their lives on the line, literally, every time they step in here. But, you know, I bring this up because we've got a big MMA fighter stepping into a boxing ring, and McGregor and Floyd now, chances are this won't happen. But seeing something like this, I mean, does it give further precedence that maybe some of these guys need to make sure that they are taken care of physically? Because, you know, a lot of MMA fighters are talking about not having proper medical coverage. UFC says, hey, we just built a medical center here in Las Vegas. It's pretty scary to run this up. What do you think about the former fighter passing away, especially on the heels of us finding out about to see another MMA fighter in the boxing ring?
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Tim Hague. You know, condolences to his family. Like you said, it's something that nobody wants to hear about. And, man, I mean, I saw the fight, and I just didn't think that the fighter was protected enough, because why was there no knockdown rule? Why was there no, you know, the standing eight counts were just really poorly executed. I think the referee could have stepped in and saved Tim Hague from further punishment. I mean, he got knocked down 3 or 4 times in the first round alone. He comes out to the second. I think he gets knocked down once more before the final knockout. I think there was a lot more that the referee could have done. I mean, this is just the result of poor commissions, limited resources. You know, unlikely that went through a medical. You know, who knows if he went in there with any kind of a head trauma, or maybe he was knocked out in training or anything. I don't know. But I think there was a lot more that could have been done by the referee in that situation. It's unfortunate what happened to Tim Hague. I don't really see it stepping in the way of McGregor and Mayweather fight. I don't think it's going to stop it or going to put any negative headlines on that front. It's just an unfortunate situation, and it's maybe a little bit of bad timing and bad press before such a big event.
Nah, certainly. And, you know, like you said, hopefully it's too late, but hopefully this is a heads up to the commission to make sure that the referees are properly trained and securing these fighters. Because that's what they're there for, the safety of the fighters. Hopefully that wakes up the commission to press these referees to make sure that they have proper credentials and their training is up to par and legit. Speaking of another fighter that's in very bad condition, Matt Hughes got into a horrible accident with his truck and train. Now, I've been trying to read articles as far as what happened. I don't know if he was just trying to cross, like trying to speed up and cross the train track and got hit. First thing I thought of was he trying to kill himself? You know, did he try to drive me into the train? But from what I'm hearing, you know, it just more so his truck got hit, but it's not really saying, well, how did it happen? You know, hey, it's unfortunate he had to be helicoptered out, but they did say he's in stable condition, not responsive yet, last time I checked. Our thoughts and prayers with Matt Hughes and his family. It's unfortunate, because especially when you look at the fact that not only what he was a fighter, but the fact that he was even talking about possibly making a comeback. It's certainly going to be talking about the monkey wrench in the plans, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can only hope that, you know, Matt Hughes is going to be back to full recovery. Hopefully he's not going to have some kind of significant brain trauma. They're saying he's going to one of the best brain trauma centers in the country. And, you know, oddly enough, he had been part of a brain trauma charity for some time before this. So, you know, hopefully he'll make a full recovery soon. Hopefully he'll start to respond and just have a normal quality of life. I mean, like you said, he was thinking about making a comeback to MMA. He was in really high spirits, and he was all up there in his mind. He said, I'm not delusional. I'm not going in there fighting against these young guys. I just want to retire I just want to go back in there because that last fight, I don't want to retire with that bad of a performance. So I just want to go in there and prove that I can, to myself, that I can still do it. Man, what a sad situation it is that we're hearing about Matt Hughes, you know, being unresponsive in a hospital. So, you know, best wishes to him, and we hope for a full recovery from him soon.
Nah, most certainly. And see, that would have been a perfect matchup for, let's say, someone like a DJ Van to go over to Bellator and say, you know what, let's see if we did right or wrong in the last performance. Let's see how it goes here. Hey, maybe if this didn't happen, Matt, he was going to come back, even though he's on the UFC podcast, who knows? Max Sarah would have came out of retirement, possibly. But, hopefully for a full recovery. Interesting enough, as we are literally wrapping up the show here, interesting enough, you know, the boxers and MMA guys are starting to go at it a little bit more. McGregor and Mayweather, we know this set. Then we have Stipe Miocic call out Anthony Joshua. Joshua responds with, who the fuck is that guy? Then Miocic responds and said, hey, this guy is renowned as the world's baddest man, and you're not even the best fighter out in the UK. I'm assuming he's referring to Michael Bisping being better. Kind of sounds like a little bit of Lennon effect you got there. Like, you try calling him out, he act like he didn't know who he is, and now you want to try to throw some shade back. You're going to say, Adrian Broner is calling out Nate Diaz as well, saying that Nate should be on the undercard of the fight, even though he's got a fight coming up pretty soon against Mike Garcia, which he should definitely be paying attention to that fight. Tyrone Woodley mentioned that maybe him and Andre Ward fight, even though the manager wants him to go to heavyweight. Real quick, what do you make about these MMA guys and boxers starting to interpret each other a little bit more? Is Mayweather McGregor the first step in us seeing more crossover events, or is it kind of going to be like the James Tony Randy Couture? One-off, and we're good.
I think this is a one-off type of fight. I mean, we might see it at some point again in the future. I think these guys are just responding to the cha-ching that's going on in this McGregor-Mayweather talks. I mean, there's going to be millions and millions of dollars up on the line, and these guys just want a piece of the pie. So it's normal to see these guys kind of calling each other out, weighing their options, and see if they can make a little bit more money out of it.
Nah, definitely. Well, that's the show, everybody. Great show. As always, man, good guys. I don't think we're going to talk that much about Bellator for like the next 7 shows total.
Let's talk about the next 7 shows exclusively Bellator, baby.
You know what? Let's do that. Next 7 shows, nothing but Bellator. So you guys be sure to tune in for that. This is Inside the Octagon. You guys can listen to us every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Ran a little longer today, but we had a lot to cover. From 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Follow Leo. Where can they find you out on social media?
Follow me at Shower Leo.
Follow me, KLUA11, that's KLUA11. Also, All Things Sports on Facebook. That's All Things Sports on Facebook. Till next week, everybody. Peace. California.